Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Church of the Masses Radio. My name is Barbara Nicolosi. I am a screenwriter, a producer. I've been a story consultant, a script consultant. I'm a member of the Writers Guild of America. I produce theater. I've consulted on everything from The Passion of the Christ to a kayak.com commercial about with nuns in it. So I've done a lot of work in the business for 23 years now, and I founded a program called Act One to help young Christians make a good start in the business. We started training writers, and then we added producers and directors, so that we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year of Act One. But I'm also an academic. I have my doctorate in creative writing from Bath University in England, and I teach at Azusa Pacific University in the Honors College. So kind of a weird, eclectic background. But my thing in the church is to talk about the intersection of culture, art, media, and faith. So I think I'm the only one who kind of does that for 20 years now. But anyway, I keep hoping other people are going to get on board and do it too. So I'm going to keep banging the drum that beauty matters, that culture matters, that story and art matter. They're not just extras, and that we need them to live a fully engaged and profound human life. So that's my thing. This show, Church of the Masses, gets its name from a quote from a 1930s theater critic who said, "Theaters are the new church of the masses. They are places where people sit in the dark and listen to people in the light tell them what it is to be human." That is a daunting and scary quote, but it's been it was on my blog. I had a million hits on my blog, and that was the name of my blog. And so when we started the radio show, we just brought it over because people knew me from that. So what we do here is we talk about news. Usually in my first segment, we talk about news interest to people of faith. And then in the second and third segment, I usually interview somebody who's doing it. And I have a great guest today, a really neat person who I want to introduce to my audience. And then I do reviews, movie reviews, in the last segment. So today we're going to review the movies Toy Story 4 and Late Night. One of those is going to get a strong thumbs up, and one of them is going to get a strong thumbs down, a profound thumbs down. So if you want to know which ones, stay tuned till segment 4. So just starting out here, what is the news of the week that's of interest? I have to point out that everyone's in Hollywood is quite upset about the box office. And we've been hearing this pretty much every year for the last decade or so, the terror of why the box office is shrinking. And despite the fact that we had a couple of mega hits in mainly just one in Avengers Endgame this year, which is, it made $600 million in a week. The rest of the summer box office has been pretty much a dismal failure. And so the most recent one to bomb was Late Night, the comedy with that Mindy Kaling wrote for Emma Thompson, which I will be reviewing. And even Toy Story 4 opened small comparatively. It did well, but it didn't do great. And this is, they kind of rely on Pixar movies at Disney to carry the franchise, carry the whole studio. So that's got everybody asking again, what's going on? And it's a multifaceted problem. They say, well, it's the streaming services are here, and this is actually, it costs right now a month. You can get a month of a streaming service like Hulu or Netflix for one movie ticket. So why would you go to the movies unless they're fabulous? And they're not. They're just not that good anymore. And so why would you do that? Number two, they've seen this, just everybody feels like they've seen it all because of the summer, the sequels and the franchises. So my husband and I were standing in the lobby, just as an anecdote, this past week when we went to see A Toy Story. And we were surrounded by the posters of all the movies coming out through the rest of the year. And there wasn't one that was an original movie. Every single one, whether it was Men in Black kind of remade or you know, just the next comic book, whatever, yet another Spider-Man. You know, it just was astounding how the lack of creativity has infected this business. And everyone's pursuing blockbusters. That's why they want to make movies that they're going to make $100 million, they're going to spend $100 million on, and they're going to make $1 billion. And that's the formula that everyone's chasing. So no one wants to make a nice little cute, thoughtful drama or a thoughtful little movie that that might be original. It's like, no, that's not going to make us, you know, $1 billion. They're not going to go to see that in Brazil. So this is really having a huge impact on storytelling. And I think I also know what the end goal, you know, the end of it is. It's just watching this business of Hollywood just crumble year by year as it's lost the audience's loyalty. So, yeah, I think it's the storytelling. That's what I think. So I think that eventually there's going to be people like me and my friends, you know, making little movies on the side, and then they're going to find a way to get them out there. That's what I think the future is going to be. The streaming services completely revolutionized the game. For example, another big story of the week was that there was a movie that opened on Netflix. It was from Netflix Studios, starring Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. It was a comedy, and 30 million people watched it. So if they had gone to the movies and paid, you know, just $10 each, that would have been a $300 million movie for Netflix. But Netflix just needs content, and so they made this, and they just put it right onto the streamer, and then 30 million people watched it. So the days of needing to kind of go to the movies are long gone. The only people who don't know it are the Hollywood studios. So I think the audience has moved on, and it's just going to be for this business to follow them. Now, the question is, well, where's that in the church? What good is that for the church, right? You know, and I think it does mean that the few gatekeepers, it used to be that, you know, 8 studios, 9 studios, and so you had about 20 people who were deciding what every movie that was going to get made. Those days are long, long gone, and thank God. So there are opportunities for people to, you know, to try to make something and then get it to one of these streaming services, which are multiplying around us all the time, Hulu and Amazon Prime and Netflix being the major players, but there's more coming. So Disney's going to have their own. Pretty much every studio is talking about having their own. So there's going to be a lot more outlets for creativity. So we'll see what happens. Huh? Another big story of the week I wanted to point to was just kind of broke this week. And that was that Google got caught by Project Veritas. So Project Veritas are these hero people who they're the ones that found that you know, caught Planned Parenthood admitting they were selling baby body parts that caused, you know, so much outrage a few years ago. But then they caught, people, they managed to go in and they find Project Veritas sneaks in and does these, they pretend to be friends, and then they get people who are cheating somehow. And so the cheaters this week that they caught are Google. So they took a woman who's a high-up tech from Google out to dinner, and they got her on tape, on video, saying that Google was taken by surprise in 2016 when Trump won, and that will not happen again because Google is manipulating their algorithms so that Trump stories and stories about the right from the right will not get exposure. She's caught saying this, dead to none. And now her statement I just read today, she came out with a statement saying, well, they took me out to dinner and I spoke, you know, I said some things that weren't carefully, you know, expressed. And I was like, well, what is that? How you cheat? You know, so they've been caught, and they're getting caught more and more. You had Senator Josh Haley of Missouri this week saying again, and this is his big issue, that the big tech companies, YouTube, Twitter, Google, Apple, have to be broken up because they are arrogant and they are the only players and they're manipulating free speech. So, you know, the devil always bites his own tail. If these people had played it a little more fair, they wouldn't be in this situation. But I think they're going to get in big trouble, and getting this woman, I think there's going to be huge blowback from that. It's just funny to me that all we've heard about since 2016 was that, you know, somehow the Trump people collaborated with Russia to manipulate our election and that how awful that was. But here you have the executive, a high up executive at Google, saying that they plan to manipulate an election, and that's okay. That's such a funny. So the consistency is obviously the hobgoblin of small minds. But I am someone who likes I guess I have a small mind because I like consistency. And this to me seems terribly inconsistent. But I do think we're going to see a breakup of a lot of these companies because they have abused their power. And they say, well, they're private companies. Yes, but the internet is a public thing. And that's the difference, right? So they are using the internet for free. And they're, you know, these companies. So in that sense, they don't get to decide what speech is good and what speech is bad. I think that the thing we have to remember when these people talk about hate speech on the left very often, it's not that the speech is hateful, it's that they hate that kind of speech, right? So it's speech they hate. And so I'm a big free speech advocate. I think everybody should have their forum. I think that that's what makes America great. So I'm glad Google got caught, and we'll see what happens to them. But they're all going to pay a price, I think, for manipulating our attention. Okay, well, stay tuned. We have a great guest who's doing something very cool. I'm very excited to introduce you to my next guest. So stay tuned. This is Barbara Nicolosi. This is Church of the Masses Radio.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello again. Welcome to second segment of Church of the Masses. This is where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. I am a writer mainly, but I do a lot of producing too, and I'm an academic, so I get real nerdy about things in culture. So one of the things we do at Church of the Masses is we interview people who are making media, making culture, who are actually doing stuff out there, because I know that for some reason in the church it's extremely daunting, the idea of us making stuff. We're very comfortable sitting on the sidelines and kind of cursing the darkness or pointing at things we don't like and whining about it. But we don't make a lot of our own stuff to really put ourselves out there. So I always try to find people who are actually doing things that are media oriented. And so we interview writers, artists, filmmakers, television writers, everybody that I can, every one of my friends. I said to my friend the other day, I'm getting to the end of my friends list, so I have to make some new friends. But Sarah is a new friend. So Sarah Davison Tracy, welcome to Church of the Masses Radio.
Thank you, Barbara. It's so good to be with you and your community.
Thank you.
Quite an honor.
Thank you very much. No, it's we're the little radio station that could hear, still starting up, but we have a lot of people that listen online. And I was just at an event a couple weeks ago, and so many people kept coming up to me. I listened to your show, and I was like, wow, I didn't know anybody was out there, you know. But it's kind of neat.
Awesome.
So it is awesome. So Sarah, you know, so my audience is primarily Catholic, Sarah. I'm not sure they will know of you, but I'm happy to introduce you to them. I met Sarah this past summer at a retreat for Christian artists, and she gave the opening talk at the retreat. And I remember sitting there because I was giving the next day's talk, and I was just like, okay, well, now what am I going to do after that talk? Anyway, so Sarah, give my audience a little sense of your story, a little bit of introduction to you, and then we're going to talk about your project, probably in the next segment. But let's just talk about you for a minute here. So, what's your thing?
Yeah, so my thing is I'm an author. I just published my first two books last year. Called Live Ablaze and Light Up the World, and Soulfully Ablaze, a 40-day journey to light up your life and the world. And I'm getting ready to publish my next book in collaboration with some incredible social justice warriors, sisters of mine in Nepal that are fighting against human trafficking. And I love to speak. I love to gather people and have conversations that fuel action, that fuel what I believe is our unique callings and destinies planted in each of us by God to make a difference in the world, to be the hands and feet of Jesus.
Cool. You know, this book, Live Ablaze, was really well received, right? It won 2018's Colorado Independent Publishers Association's award for the social activism and charity category. That's pretty good for your first book or your second book?
Well, I published and launched them together, actually, at the same time.
Wow.
So it was kind of this beautiful kind of dual launch. And yes, it was incredibly well received. And I keep celebrating it and being humbled by it, because the ripples just keep on going and getting bigger and bigger, which is quite cool.
Thank God.
And actually, so in that, like, it's interesting because I have an organization that I founded called Seeds of Exchange, and that organization is very much in the world and interfaith, kind of all people welcome, regardless of what faith they have, where they're from in the world, with this belief that this mighty human family is quite extraordinary and beautifully charismatic and different. When we get together and sit at the table and listen to each other and learn from each other. And so these books really, the first two books were really written with that in mind, that my hope would be that people would, that it would be a bridge connecting people with more and more and more of who they are and what they're meant to do and be in the world, and then also connecting them with each other.
So very good.
Really,
so basically the thing is try to help people figure out what they're meant to do to not only save the world, but give their own life meaning, right? Find out what is it that God has for you. And and so that's so many people out there just have no idea. You know, I teach young people, undergraduates, and sometimes I look at them and they're so already bored and hopeless. They don't have any sense of vision. You know, it's a new thing, because when I was their age, I did want to change the world, and all of us did, you know. But I look at my students now, and they're depressed more often than not. You know, they think they have no idea where to start. And so the idea of, okay, no, let's roll up our sleeves and figure out how we can make this world more beautiful, even more beautiful, by recombining what God has given us. So you threw something out there that I remember when you first heard about it, I was like, what? You know, and that's the Nepal thing. How did you end up working with women in Nepal? So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So for me, the answer to that has its, you know, roots way back when I was a kid. And I was incredibly fortunate and blessed to go as a kiddo, as a teenager, to India on a mission with my church. And I was a Christian at that. I was a Christian since I was a little wee one, like 6 years old. And really, so I see, because my lens, my personal lens, is connecting with God through the person of Jesus Christ. And so for me, I saw immediately the gift of this experience in India and some of the fire that was getting stoked in me of love of culture, love of stories, a passion to bring the stories back and share them with my community, my church, raise money, you know, bring people back 2 years later, which I did. And it just kind of fueled this passion for inviting people to really deeply see, learn from, connect with, find ways to love and serve people near and far.
Wow.
And so fast forward to your Nepal question. Mm-hmm. I have always loved connecting with people. And so folks often in the last couple of decades, I'll get these random phone calls. Hey, Sarah, I have a friend of a friend of a friend who is doing XYZ. You have any ways you can help or ways we can do something, collaborate together? And I got that phone call from a friend of mine saying he was hosting a community of folks from Nepal, a team of folks that were on a global or a nationwide U.S. tour through the country to share their stories about human trafficking, about caste, about rising out of the ashes. These also are all people that are Christians themselves, and that was the root of their hope. And this friend asked if I would host them on their week-long kind of tour stop in Denver. And in that week, all kinds of things happened, including a profound sense of family that was formed between us. And by the end of the week, they had asked me if I would consider writing the first book about their people that has ever been published in English. They are a low caste people called the Badi, spelled B-A-D-I. And until this generation, when born a woman in this Badi caste, you're one, the only thing available to you for work is that of a prostitute. And many of these women are trafficked and some are left in village brothels. And these change makers are looking to upend that and create more freedom and possibility for their people.
How many years have you been working with them in Nepal?
3 years.
3 years. Wow. 3 years. And I mean, just tell us any one like kind of really cool story that kind of pops for you.
Well, I'll tell you, the main storyteller in this book that I'm about to publish, her name is Hannah. And one of her sisters had been trafficked to a brothel in New Delhi, India, and had been missing, like not known if she was alive or dead for many, many years, 11 years to be exact, by her family. And finally, they found out that she was alive about 11 years after she had been trafficked. And they, one by one, brought her children back to Nepal so they could be educated. And after 12 and a half years, she was rescued from this brothel and chose to go back to Nepal. And she herself, after, the calculate is like being raped by 60,000 men over the course of 11 and a half years. She herself is now, you know, rising out of the ashes and is chose to tell her story in this book, which requires an enormous amount of courage, as did four of her sisters. And she's wanting to elevate, you know, using the pain of her life, not being not curling up in a ball, which anyone would understand if she needed and wanted to do, but she is rising purposefully with this goal to try to speak truth, to try to shine a light on the injustice of human trafficking and caste, and trying to share the hope that comes from being a child of God, from wow. being someone that is so loved and so destined for greatness.
So that
she's just,
sure.
you know, that's one of
a whole bunch. Story. So that story's going to be in the book. What's the new book's name?
Yes. The new book's name is No Longer Untouchable.
No Longer Untouchable. And when does that come out?
Yeah. Well, we're working on hoping for October launch in Nepal and December a launch in the United States.
Cool. Well, when you do, give me a call and we'll do a show on it.
You know it.
Very good. So the book that people can get now is Live Ablaze and Light Up the World, and it's on Amazon. And Sarah Davis and Tracy is with us, and she's the author. And so Sarah, we're going to segue into our, I'm waiting for the music any minute now to tell me that my clock is down here that usually tells me, you know, this is how much time you have, and I don't have it. So now I'm like, I know it's coming. but yeah, I know, right? We're the little radio station that could hear, right? So just to kind of lead in, so tell us about Seeds of Exchange.
Yeah, so Seeds of Exchange is an organization that I started about 14 years ago, and it is essentially, to use your phrase, the little radio station that could, it's the little movement that could. It's believing that we together can be a movement of people that can really make a difference, can really light up the world and make a difference together, whether it's in our neighborhoods, whether it's in distant lands, whether it's in our families, whether it's in human rights abuses, but just really saying whatever the thing is, we like kind of what you were saying about your college kids, without that, our lives do not have the texture. They don't have the affect of calling, of destiny, of palpable purpose. And so what I'm looking to do in the community of Seeds of Exchange is to share stories, is to share opportunities for people to engage, to connect with each other, to find ways to use what they love and serve the world.
Cool. And there's the music. So if you want to read more about Seeds of Exchange, if you want to be part of the conversation, it's seedsofexchange.org. That's seeds, S-E-E-D-S, of exchange. org. Okay, stay tuned. So then in our next segment, Sarah's going to tell us about this project in the Congo that she's involved in. So stay tuned. This is Church of the Masses.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again. We're half over. Again, I just always marvel at how fast time moves in radio. It's just like time warp. But here we are, half done. And so our guest today is Sarah Davison Tracy. She is the... I guess, would you say the president of, or the coordinator of, or the chief bottle washer at Seeds of Exchange?
Yeah.
Chief bottle washer. I know. I've run nonprofits. I know how that is. It's very glamorous, right? Before we head into talking about the Congo, you know, you wrote a couple books. And again, one of the things I'm doing on this show is trying to encourage my audience out there, people of faith, to actually make media and culture. What makes you decide, wow, I'm going to write a book? I mean, where does that come from?
Yeah, so for me, again, as I mentioned earlier, since I was a wee little girl, I've had the gift of being in conversation, in relationship with Jesus, and finding my way as I dialogue and listen and respond to what I sense he is drawing me to do and how to be in the world. And I have always loved books, like diving in and getting lost in a story, you know, as a little girl was one of my great joys. And so I think just my love and passion for story in the written form kind of planted seeds for me to one day craft and write my own. Mm-hmm. And, I really feel like once I started writing my books 3 years ago, the fire hose is just on and I don't see it going off anytime soon. I have my fourth book drafted and the idea for my fifth book. So it's kind of like, for me, I'm so intrigued by what you are inviting us to consider, which is like how to be makers that is telling the story that God has written on our hearts in the world. And I just, it's one of the great joys and questions of my life and having conversations with people that are doing that in such different, prismatic, incredibly beautiful ways. And so I just believe that that's our invitation as every single person on the planet has something unique to do in the world that will never be done until that person does it. Cool. So I think that's the treasure hunt and the adventure of life.
Very good. And that's a great segue into this Congo project. And I've been practicing how to say this, and it's, you know what? I'm not even going to try. I will. Kitoko Oyo?
Yes.
Yeah, Kitoko Oyo. Okay, so I watched this amazing thing on Facebook. On if you go to Seeds of Exchange on Facebook, Sarah has uploaded a conversation she had with Kitoko Oyo and others in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So tell us about Kitoko and what's going on here.
Yeah, so one of the initiatives that we have with Seeds of Exchange is to, in very much in keeping with your passion and purpose, Barbara, is to shine a light on just beautiful story making in the world. People that are doing things and telling stories with just in a way that we all get to participate and be a part of it. So we have monthly fundraising partners that are friends of mine from around the world. Some are in the United States and some are in, you know, outside of the US. And this fella, a friend of mine just sent me an email and said, hey, the co-founder of Kitoko Oyo is a dear friend of mine. His name is Papi. He's from the Congo. Would you have a conversation with him and see if there's any ways y'all might collaborate and, you know, your fundraising work of Seeds could perhaps benefit this project, which is called Kitoko Oyo. So he and I hopped on a video call, and he also is a brother in Jesus. And he and his wife have a profound mission to just be the hands and feet of Jesus however they can in the world. They live in Germany and have a number of projects in the Congo where he was born. And his story is incredible. He, the co-founder of Kotoko Oyo, his name is Papi. He was a child soldier in the Congo. He was conscripted by his uncle and at 9 years old. And so since we don't have time to go into the long details of his incredible story, what happened is he ended up escaping and after a year and for 2.5 years wandered sometimes with a couple other kids and sometimes solo and found himself in South Africa and kind of put some roots down there and was found by some Youth with a Mission volunteers who invited him to have some food because he was hungry. He was on the streets. He was in a very dangerous part of the city. And over time, the way God just kind of wooed him with his love and purpose and his destiny was to use the pain of his life as a child soldier and having grown up in a very vulnerable position to go back to his country and to fuel a number of initiatives, this Kotoko Oyo being one, that he's passionate about media, just like you, Barbara, and he is looking in this project to illuminate the beautiful, the good, the true, the empowered stories that are rising up, that are present in the people of the Congo now, but that often don't get told. The stories that get told more are of it being the rape capital of the world and of all of the dark, mm-hmm. the traumatic. And his passion that I believe God has put in his heart is to fuel a movement of change makers, of storytellers that are really wanting to share the light.
Wow. Now,
to
what
people to live that?
Sure. So their medium, they're going to be doing documentaries. Is this what they're doing? Or short films?
So what they're doing, it's a multimedia project because he himself is a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. He's partnered up with a co-founder who's an incredibly talented photographer named Ryan Carter. Mm-hmm. And they have brought writers on their team. So what they are producing is a multimedia project called Kotoko Oyo that will have a written version, that will have a digital version available online, and one that folks can access from their phones too, yeah. because they really want this to and be kind of a model of how to tell the beautiful stories amidst the hard and dark and the challenging.
And you have an interview there that you've uploaded on Seeds of Exchange yeah. with Ryan Carter talking about the project. And so, yeah. you know, so basically this is like, and it's amazing to me, it's like the budget is $2,000, you know, like in America, that wouldn't even be the food services budget, you know, on a, you know, but here it can do amazing things.
It can. And the budget, to be really clear, what we're doing with this, with our partnership and fundraising goal of this $2,000 during the month of June. So we've got 6 days left here to raise about $1,200 is our goal. And that specific, every one of those $2,000 will go to the team that is living and working in the Congo that are gathering the stories, that are interviewing both kind of high up influencers and everyday people, you know, with shops on the streets and moms that are walking 5 miles to get water. And they're just looking to share this story. And so the fundraiser that we are supporting here is a portion of the entire kind of operating budget for Kotoko Oyo. And I just love anything that we can be a part of that's grassroots, sure. that has a deep kind of immediate connection with people that are, like, it will pay for these families, you know, food and school fees and really empower their storytelling in the days and years to come.
So what kind of stories should we expect to see coming out of this? What would be an example of the stories from the Congo that we're going to see here?
Yeah, so, geez, that one of the things that they're hoping is for people that have not ever gotten to go to the Congo or to places around Africa that have a unique kind of flavor. They're going to create a virtual experience where you get to go into the household of one of their storytellers and literally just kind of do a virtual walk through the household and see what the kitchen is like and see what the kids' you know, room looks like and have a conversation in the house, you know, with you know, mud walls around them and be able to say, oh, like kind of put ourselves, transport ourselves into a totally different environment with the goal that we, as we learn about each other, we can really love each other more wholly. So that's what, just on an experiential level. And then they're looking to tell stories about, as I said, from change makers, you know, from politicians, and what's your vision and how, what's kind of the next, what is coming in terms of hope and future for this country. And then storytellers, as I mentioned, you know, shopkeepers, where we get to hear from people that are just looking to make enough money to be able to put the table for their family that night. And, but as they tell these stories, they have an eye for the glitter and for the light and for the hope that kind of is the thread and the beauty. That is the cornerstone, is beauty throughout all of these individual stories, that hopefully their hope is that loops back to the viewer to find that same thing in their own lives.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is the good part of Hollywood breaking up, right? Because, you know, I started the show by talking about this, everybody's heads are exploding in town because Hollywood is dying. You know, that this and Hollywood has a stranglehold for, you know, almost a century on the what gets put out there. And what got put out there was an image of America, right? You know, that was changes the American dream, right? The American dream when we were founded was liberty. But the American dream that Hollywood propounds in the post-war period, especially the mid-30s and the post-war period, becomes, no, it becomes money, you know? So Citizen Kane is about that. It's like, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? You know, that we're saying that to be an American means you can, you know, you can start with nothing and you can become a billionaire. That becomes the American dream. And that becomes the center of the stories, you know, that are being told to the world and dominated by our film industry. So I love that this is happening, and I love you for making it, giving it a forum. And so thank you so much.
You.
Check out Seeds of Exchange on Facebook, and please donate to this project. Sarah, thank you. We're going to have you on again and talk about what's coming up, okay?
All right, my sister.
Thank you. God bless.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello again. Here we are in the last segment of Church of the Masses. And this is the segment in which I do movie reviews. And I was originally just going to review Late Night because I saw it and I was in a complete snit for 2 days after seeing this this movie. I was so mad because I love Emma Thompson, and watching this movie made me really mad. So I was just going to spend 15 minutes ranting about it. But then I saw Toy Story 4, and I said, yeah, I got to talk about this movie too. So that's good. So I have a thumbs up and a thumbs down, and so it's no surprise now after that lead what's going to happen here. So let's talk about Late Night. Late Night is a comedy that's coming from Mindy Kaling, who came to fame through The Office. And I do think Mindy's actually talented. And they say that Mindy's family is a conservative religious family. But as Mindy has made it bigger and bigger in the entertainment industry, she's been shedding all of that. So anyway, I do think Mindy's talented, but her show, her television show, is really a kind of gross and raunchy, and it's getting more and more raunchy. She reminds me a little of Barbara Streisand in that she's very obsessed with her appearance, and it comes up in almost every show. And in fact, in this movie, it comes up too. She doesn't think she's beautiful. And so she always has to kind of hit that, you know, that people finding her attractive is interesting. So anyway, Late Night was a comedy that she wrote for Emma Thompson, who I just love Emma Thompson as an actor. I think she's one of the best of her generation. And but the idea is that Emma Thompson is playing a kind of Jay Leno or a character. She's got a late night show. She's the only woman in television. And the show is failing, and so accidentally Mindy Kaling gets hired to be a writer on the show, and she brings in this breath of hope and idealism that everybody else who's working on the show, they're all white men, everybody's become very cynical. And so the show is supposed to be how she reinvigorates it, how she helps Emma Thompson rediscover the magic as an entertainer. But the thing about comedies is they're supposed to be funny. And this one is not funny. And the reason it isn't funny is because it's just weighed down with all of the social agenda, leftward agenda of the that Mindy Kaling is hitting here. So the only joke that we ever hear them write for the show is one about abortion. Like, whoa, that's always a real rip, snort, and fun thing to laugh about, right? But they construct a joke about abortion, and the thing is that it doesn't get played the first time because everyone doesn't have the courage, and then finally Emma Thompson finds the courage to tell this joke about abortion, and that's like this big victory. But the show is about, you know, just like really, really, you know, she's oppressed because she's a woman of color, and she's a woman, and everybody is a bigot, and it's just not that funny. The jokes that are in the movie are all that kind of sneering thing that you kind of see on Jon Stewart. Look how stupid those people are. And this is the perversion of comedy. Charlie Chaplin said that the point of comedy is to help us bridge the gap between who we are and who we think we are, or who we, you know, we say to the world that we are. And that comedy is supposed to kind of bridge through that so that we get real. But it should be done in a compassionate way, that you don't, you know, you don't point your finger at the kid and say, the fat kid, and say, let's all laugh at the fat kid. you know, that that's funny. And Chaplin says, no, the idea is to do something gentle that makes us laugh at ourselves, and then we can live with ourselves, and then we can live together. And that, so comedy should be not about scapegoating and making someone else ridiculous. So this movie, really, that's all it does, is it kind of isolates a certain people that aren't cool, aren't hip, aren't politically correct, and then makes them the butt of jokes. And it's just kind of, you know, Emma Thompson tries here, but the character as written is just an angry, bitter, nasty woman. And there's not a lot funny there. And it was surprising to me because I went to Rotten Tomatoes and I said, oh, this movie is just so bad. And yet Rotten Tomatoes has a 79% critical approval for it, which is very high for a movie. So all the mainstream critics, with the exception of the Detroit News, I'm looking down the list here, all the mainstream critics gave it a positive. And this is like extraordinary to me because it's just not that funny. It doesn't work. So be warned, late night is not a good thing. It's not going to make you feel happy. It's not going to do what comedy ought to do. In fact, it's just going to make you angry. It made me angry because it's just kind of so many cheap shots. Done there. And there's nobody really in the world like the people that they scapegoat in the movie. So, okay, let's move on to the happy news, and that is Toy Story 4. Now, when I heard there was going to be another Toy Story, I groaned because it's like, how can they do another movie? The kid just went to college in Toy Story 3. And so he's grown up, and there it is. Well, they did it. They're telling a whole new story now. And I think they have not only 4 set up, but I mean, 5 and 6, you can see at the end of number 4, you can see where 5 and 6 are. So Woody in this one, in the first 3, it's him getting separated from the little boy as the little boy grows up. And now in this one, it's about him kind of being separated from the other toys. It's a very funny, delightful. I brought my curmudgeon husband with me, the West Texas cowboy, and he just laughed all the way through it, as did I. There's a funny, funny new thing they do here with a character called Forky. Which is that the little girl makes a toy and it comes to life because she made it, and it thinks it's because she made it out of garbage. It thinks it's trash, and you just keep laughing because the character of Forky just keeps saying trash, trash. I need to be with trash, and you know, and you just laugh. But it really is a metaphor for how people can feel comfortable in a world that isn't good, but that's the only world they know, and so Forky has to be. You know, has to be kind of weaned off of the world he knows. As he says, when at one point Woody says to him, why do you want to be with the trash? And he's like, well, it's warm and it's comfortable. And, you know, and it's like, well, it's trash. But anyway, funny, funny movie. And they almost had a misstep at the end because I thought, wow, are they setting this up for Woody to become some kind of selfish thing? Because there's a character who's struggling with her own isolation, as all the Toy Story movies always have that. I should have trusted them better. They're too smart at Pixar. And in fact, they end up just flipping that on its head, and just kind of very cool. There's some funny stuff in this. The dummies are toys that are, you know, ventriloquist dummies, and so they don't talk, but they're really played up to be scary, and we were laughing, but I imagine little kids, they would be a little scary there in the toy in the antique store. So anyway, the theme of this movie, Toy Story 4, is that you have to find your thing, your place. You have to find your place, and that Woody has kind of settled in, and he's accepted that he has no place anymore because the little boy has grown up, and that Woody is no longer have anything to do, and he has to learn. No, it's going to mean you're launching out, Woody. You're going to have to leave the comfort of, you know, of the house, but you're being called to do something else, and it's very much tied in with community. Bo Peep is waiting for him there, and she's kind of inviting him. But he has to take his courage in his hands and leave his friends in search of something new that he's meant to do. So I think it's an amazing theme for kids movie, and as Pixar always does, there's stuff on every level for the children that they will laugh at and get, and then this whole other level that the parents will be laughing at. There's in this case they do some riffs on the 70s again, which is one of their keynotes, and character in it that's like an Evel Knievel character, and you just laugh your head off at it. So it's beautifully rendered. By the way, the arena is they kind of have two contrasting arenas in Toy Story 4. One of them is a dusty, dingy antique shop, which is a metaphor for a lot of our lives, where we collect old things and put them on shelves and say, okay, this is who I am. This is my life. And then there is a carnival right next door to the antique shop. So the characters are kind of going between both worlds. And the carnival is scary. It's big, but it's bright and beautiful and an adventure. And so you have the option several of the characters, they have to make this choice. Do I stay where it's safe, but I'm basically kind of dead here? Or do I go where I can have an adventure? And again, not in a selfish way, but in a beautiful vocational way, the characters are being called to a new circle of love. And so it's just a lovely, touching, funny film. So I have to, as mad as I am at Pixar for making a franchise that goes on and on, because I love to see original storytelling, they really did it with Toy Story 4. It's a great little film, and it's worthy of, honestly, I think with The Godfather 1 and 2, Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 is one of the greatest film franchises ever made. Their stories get better in each one, and they're just beautifully done. So I have nothing but high praise for Toy Story 4. And people are saying, you know, oh, but there's a feminist character in it, whatever. I don't care about that. It didn't bother me at all. I think she's the character who's played Bo Peep, and she's been wounded, and so she's acting out of that. So, but that's a neat thing about the characters. All of them are wounded, and how do they all handle that is what makes for the substance of the story. So great thing. And I want to make a point too. There's a new movie that was announced called Soul by Pixar. Pete Docter is the brain behind it, and he was the one who gave us Inside Out, which was the movie that Pixar did about inside the little girl's head, all the emotions and her memories, which I really felt had been cribbed from Augustine's Confessions on Memory. It was really striking to me. But anyway, so Pete Docter is a believer, and he's a brilliant guy, and now he's doing a Pixar movie called Soul. What is our soul? And it's going to be an animated Pixar. It's a new one they're doing. So I'm really excited about that. It will be coming out next year. And so there are some things to look forward to. So there's my reviews. Late Night is just too cynical and just not funny. Don't waste your time. If you must see it because you're an Emma Thompson, Mindy Kaling fan, wait till it comes on your streaming services, and don't give them money to validate their bad choices. Go see Toy Story 4. Bring your kids. Bring your friends. Everybody will enjoy it. So there we go. All right. So thank you very much for tuning in to A Church of the Masses. We are the only place that I know that talks about the intersection of faith and culture. So go out there and make beautiful things. God bless you.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. Oh my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole church, grant it love and the light of thy spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great high priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.